It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the new forest supervisor for the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, which covers more than 1.5 million acres of Wisconsin's North Woods in 11 counties. Join in on forestry, wildlife habitat, recreation, timber harvesting, wilderness conservation, and more. 800-642-1234. Forest Supervisor Jen Youngblood previously served as the Deputy Forest Supervisor on the Chippewa National Forest in north central Minnesota, started her position here at the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest in October. Jen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you for having me today.
Yes, and so you are fresh eyes on this forest coming from out of state. What challenges do you see ahead for the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest?
Well, first I want to let you know, I have been a Wisconsin resident since 1995 in Waukesha County, so I am not coming from out of state. My husband is a fifth generation Wisconsinite, so I am really happy to be home and serving my friends, my family, and all the residents of Wisconsin. And first, I want to, you know, just really thank you for the opportunity to speak with all your public radio listeners. You know, you have a great audience, and I'm one of those folks that love to listen to you. And so it's really great to have this platform for sharing and to respond to your question. So I've been here for 28 days on the Shawamigan-Nicolet, and my predecessor, who was absolutely an amazing forest supervisor, was here for about 12 years. So it is fresh eyes. And so as I'm starting this new adventure, I'm really fortunate to have amazing staff and work with great external partners, work with great communities in the Northwoods. I live in the Northwoods, so it's really nice to be here. And, you know, and so when I think about what I'm doing here in my role, in this new role for the Forest Service, you know, I always tell our folks here, our last name is Service. And I've always had this rule, as I have a picture of my grandmother and my great grandmother and my mother, and they always watch over me. And I always ask myself, what good am I doing today? And at the end of the day, ask, what good have I done today? Mm. And so I really believe in our mission of service to the people of Wisconsin and the American public. And so, you know, as I think about starting this, and it's very new, a vision for the Shawamigan-Nicolet is really to fulfill our mission, which we're a multi-use agency. We harvest timber and do active management on the land. We hope people come and recreate and enjoy the amazing fishing and hunting and you know, opportunities of those types of things in Wisconsin, as well as, you know, just having the quiet time in the forest. And our mission really is to sustain the health, diversity, and productivity of the nation's forests and grasslands to meet the needs and of present and future generations. And so our motto is also caring for the land and serving people. And so as I step into this role, I like to think about, as I talk to our external partners, as I talk to our employees, as I'm talking to your viewers or your listeners today, I'm sorry,
no, that's thinking okay.
It's video because I'm on the computer. you know, to fulfill our mission and our values, our service, interdependence, conservation, diversity, and safety. And we not only think about that in terms of our own employees, but what do people feel when they come and they recreate and they utilize our forest lands, and making sure that we're also honoring tribes and their ancestral homelands and treaty rights on this forest, because they were here before many of us were here in Wisconsin. So it's that balance. And so as I move forward, my internal principles as I come into this role are really fairness and integrity, service, as I just spoke about, respecting the dignity of everyone, building trust, and that takes a lot of time. I'm a big believer in Stephen Covey and the speed of trust, and really growing, and also taking my values, which are kind of my roadmap to make sure my principles are moving forward as I lead this forest into the next several years, but increasing communication, both internally and externally, being respectful and honoring everybody's viewpoints. And we may not come to consensus, but we have to have fierce conversations sometimes and really talk about things. And they might be uncomfortable, but we have to have courage and boldness to do this. I try to be transparent and authentic. And I believe in investing in others and really making sure that we're dependable in our service to the American people and to the residents of Wisconsin and the people who live, recreate, and enjoy our forest.
We're talking about Wisconsin's largest national forest, the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest in northern Wisconsin. Its new forest supervisor with us, Jen Youngblood. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jen, you mentioned there restoring trust. Where has trust been eroded? Can you build on that a little bit?
Well, I think it's for me. I think the staff on this forest really has worked hard. The previous forest supervisor has really worked hard, and we have a lot of good trust and relationships with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, with our Wisconsin Tribal Conservation Advisory Council, with other partners at the Nature Conservancy, Ruffed Grouse Society, a lot of those partners we work with. So it's more for me as a new leader coming in and building trust. And for those folks that are outside that don't know me, even though I am a Wisconsin resident, that don't know me, to get to know me, get to know how I work, and to build the trust with them. There's not really a broken trust. It's that was more about how I'm coming in and showing up as a new leader.
I want to look at how climate change has affected this forest. And you mentioned outside groups, and there's funding from the Great American Outdoor Act to develop a climate change work plan. What has been learned about climate change? Because there's been a lot of climate change response framework done with this forest. What has this forest learned about adapting to climate change and mediating climate change?
Well, Kate, I want to thank you for that question, because before I moved to Wisconsin, I grew up by the Colorado River Indian Tribes Reservation. As you know, California, Arizona, those western states are really seeing climate change with water issues. And so we as a forest here in Wisconsin, we have our eye on climate change. And like you said, we've initiated a climate change work plan very specific to the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest. And we have a lot of our specialists who serve on the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts Forestry Working Group. And that group shares information about climate change impacts and adaptation across the forestry community. It's not just federal agencies, but it's state agencies, local agencies. And we're taking information and we're putting it into action by helping foresters and land managers adapt and prepare for this future change we're seeing. And the Shawamigan-Nicolet also participates in climate change working groups. And we've done a lot of workshops sponsored by the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters under the Climate and Energy Initiative. And another thing that we do is we have a lot of people that may not know this in your listeners, but it's not just the Forest Service is not just the National Forest System. We also have our Northern Research Station. There's multiple in different regions. We have research teams. We have our Forest Products Lab in Madison, Wisconsin. And we also have another branch we call state and private forestry, who really work closely with the states to implement some of these programs. And so what we're doing is we're working not only with our own researchers at Northern Research Lab, but we're also working with external university partners and researchers, and we're hosting study sites for regeneration of different species through an assisted migration project, where we're planting tree species that typically have southern ranges. And what we're hoping to see through that is how they survive and how they're developing climate impact assessment tools to forecast any of this future climate change impacts on the ecological systems on our forest.
What has been the work done to restore the Mukwa Pine Barrens, the Pine Barrens ecosystem that has been so delicate? What does that ecosystem restoration look like?
You know, I've been here 28 days, and so I don't have enough to really give you a good response to that. But, you know, we are looking at climate change adaptation strategies, mm-hmm. and we're trying to look at how those also are going to protect roads and trails. And so I'm kind of running through my head of what I know about that restoration on the Mukwa Barrens. And I know I worked in our regional office, and I know before I got in the forest that there's been restoration of plants mm-hmm. and reintroducing different sharp-tailed grouse species that are culturally relevant to the indigenous Ojibwe bands that have ties to the forest. And so we're doing things like that. And that's one project of many that we're doing on the forest to make sure that, you know, we're coming up with strategies for increasing the rate of reforestation, that we're engaging in climate-informed reforestation, and that we're reforesting in the right places at the right time and at the right scale. So that's what I can tell you, and I apologize.
Sure. No, that's okay. Jen Youngblood with us, forest supervisor for the Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest in northern Wisconsin, joining in the work of managing this land for multiple uses, as she has been telling us about, like forestry, wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, fisheries management. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up our conversation with Jen Youngblood, the new forest supervisor for the Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest. The U.S. Forest Service describes it as representing the best of Wisconsin's Northwoods, managed with multiple uses in mind. Join in with questions for the new forest supervisor. Your experiences connected to this forest, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Forest Supervisor Jen Youngblood stays with us. Jen, I want to talk about timber harvesting. The forest's most recent sale program identifies about 130 million board feet of timber available for sale, a mix of species. How do timber sales affect funding to help maintain a healthy forest? Jen, are you there? Okay.
I am. Sorry. I had a little glitch in my system here, and that's okay. Apologize. So you broke up a little bit. Could you repeat
sure.
that question? I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. You've had a recent sale of a timber sale, 130 million board feet of timber for sale, mix of species. So how do timber sales affect what you can do to maintain the forest?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, as you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about the blowdown. A lot of people were it impacted a lot of our forest lands in 2019. And so we basically had about 286,000 acres of damage across Wisconsin, and about 131,000 of those were on national, 131,000 were on national forest lands. And so we had a lot of harvest of that down timber. And what that does is when we have a timber harvest, that those sales, those profits come back to the forest. And what we do is we take those funds and we put them back into work, whether it's a recreation project like improving a campground, if it is creating a trail system where someone wants to access an area. It benefits everyone. And we can do things like, I'm sorry, I'm trying to, again, 28 days, you're the mm-hmm. new kid on the block here. So basically we get that money back and we can take that money and put it into reforestation. So if we have an area, like we just talked about during climate change, the Moqua Barrens, if there's a species that we need to reintroduce or make sure is maintained, we can put that money back into that. So what timber sales for us do is they are a benefit to communities, to local businesses, and to the forest and the users of the forest and the people that use the forest, because we don't just, that money just doesn't go into like a box somewhere and it's not of benefit. So timber sales help us get our work done to the benefit of the people that use the forest.
Let's take a call now. Mike in Oregon. Mike, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. We have a cottage up in the Nicolet National Forest that was next near a landmark called the MacArthur Pine. And this MacArthur Pine was one of the huge old original pine trees that were on this land. And unfortunately, it succumbed to lightning and no longer exists. The poor thing is passed away. But my question is, are there any plans to let some of these trees grow super old like they were originally when we settled the area?
Thank you, Mike. Jen?
Mike, that is a great question. You know, for your listeners, there was a Federal Register notice that went out asking people to make comments to the Forest Service on what do they see as old growth. And so what we do, Mike, on the forest is we do what we call active management, and we try to balance. We have a forest plan that really directs the work we do, and it incorporates best science. It incorporates all of our laws, rules, and authorities on how we manage land. So to your question, we use that. We use what we hear from residents, from the public, from our partners. And we do what they call a NEPA document, a National Environmental Policy Act assessment. And we look at things like that and we try to balance. We don't want to go cut down all the old trees. That's not what we do. And we don't want to cut down all the baby trees either. So we try to look at it in a more holistic way of making sure we're allowing, like you're asking, those old growth trees to remain. But sometimes when they start getting, you know, to the end of their life or they become unsafe, we need to manage them. And that's what we're trying to do, is it's a balance. It's a very delicate scientific and ecological balance to do what you're asking. But it's very important to us that we do this. And our folks that work in the natural and renewable resources team are just amazing. Many of them have PhDs. They've been doing this work a long time, and they are experts in doing this. So I really do, Mike, appreciate your question, and I hope the weather in Oregon is good today. Thank you.
We're talking about the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest in northern Wisconsin. New Forest Supervisor Jen Youngblood with us. Jen, you mentioned the derecho that hit, that violent storm that hit in 2019, 130,000 some acres. Are restoration efforts going fast enough? Are they moving fast enough?
Yes, they are. And it's amazing what our folks did. Because again, you know, as a resident, I knew what happened, but not working on the forest. And just what I've seen in both capacities as a Wisconsin resident and driving around and what I can see from my car, but then also now being here on the forest. You know, the reforestation is really amazing. Most of the sites that were damaged were former pine plantations, and they're going to be planted with mixes of red pine, white pine, and tamarack. And they're going to really allow us to Mike's question, to get the area reforested and allow those to mature. So at some point in the future, for future generations and future needs of our communities, they can be harvested in a safe, an ecological appropriate manner.
And we're almost out of time, but as you do this type of restoration, what is your approach to wildfires and your approach to prescribed burns? Because wildfires are such a concern with climate change.
Correct. We are very fortunate on this forest. We are not like out west. We don't have the wildfire situations they do in California. But I agree with what you're saying. Climate change is really important. So what we are doing is our fire program is amazing. They work with all of our other resource programs, whether it be wildlife, timber, recreation. They are doing very specific prescribed burns in a very controlled fashion to make sure that we, as climate change ensues, we do not get to the point where we're having very large fires. Our fires on this forest, when we do have them, are very, very small. They're probably less than 10 acres.
Jen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate, for having me. And I hope all our veterans out there are honored. And thank you so much. And you have a wonderful, wonderful day.
You too. Jen Youngblood, Forest Supervisor for the Shawamigan-Nicolay National Forest. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Three words on the front of the Wisconsin Elections Commission site. If you haven't been there, results take time. We're in conversation with our state's chief election official. Megan Wolf is here, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission that administers statewide elections. Join in on the midterm election, your experience at your polling place, the process of unofficial election results and next steps, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Administrator Megan Wolf, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. As we talk, less than 48 hours after polls closed, what are clerks and other election officials now focused on doing?
Well, I really appreciate your emphasis on the program this morning and throughout your coverage on the important work that happens after Election Day. So for election officials around the state, Election Day isn't just one day. They're, of course, preparing for it long before Election Day, administering in-person voting and by-mail voting. And then after the election is when we start the important process of certifying the election results. So on election night, the results that you see are unofficial. They're usually a pretty accurate estimate of what the final election results will be, but there are three levels of verification that happen with those unofficial results that are required by law. The first starts either on the evening of the election or the day immediately following on Wednesday, where your municipality, so this is your town, your city, or your village, they're going to conduct their local canvass where they're doing verifications, like making sure that there weren't more ballots issued than they have registered voters. They're going to make sure that they have the right number of signatures in the poll book as ballots that they issued at the polls. All those really important checks happen in public, so observers can be a part of that process as they verify. And once your municipality, so again, that city, town, and village, once they do their verifications and certify their official results at the municipal level, then it's going to go to the county over the next couple of weeks. And the county is going to, again, do all those verifications to make sure that the numbers make sense. And if they have a discrepancy, they have to figure that out, again, as part of a public process. And then the county certifies the results. And then finally, it comes to the state where we, again, do those checks and we canvass the results as part of a public process. And then the final step is that the chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Don Millis, that he certifies the results of the election. And by law, that has to happen by December 1st. And in addition to that, there's also post-election voting equipment audits. So yesterday, we held a public meeting where we randomly selected 10% of the voting wards and districts to be audited. And what's going to happen there is that 10% of those voting districts, which is about 360, will conduct a audit of their voting equipment in public, where they will hand count the ballots and verify that the paper total on the paper ballots matches the total on the voting equipment. So much exciting, important stuff happens after the close of polls.
Thank you for taking us through those steps. And now looking here at the unofficial results in these very tight races, Fewer than 40,000 votes separated the candidates in statewide races for the Senate. As you know, Attorney General, Secretary of State, and Treasurer, and there, the Associated Press hasn't declared a winner in the Secretary of State election yet. So how does the state handle recounts after such narrow election results?
Another great question. Wisconsin is no stranger to recounts. We often have very close races that result in an aggrieved party being able to ask for a recount. So the law says that if you have candidates that are within 1% of one another in that contest, that the aggrieved party, so the person that is down by, you know, 1% or less, that they're able to ask for a recount. Now, if the margin is between 1% and 0.26%, then the candidate has to pay for that recount.
Okay.
If the margin is a quarter of a percent or less, then the recount is free, or for the candidate at least, not for the state necessarily. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind, that it has to be within that 1% margin for the candidate to even be eligible for a recount. And you can't, the candidate can't make a request for a recount until we have those certified results from all 72 counties. So right now, again, the counties are canvassing and certifying the election at the county level. And once we have all of the certified canvasses in from the 72 counties, the candidates will then be able to look at that to determine whether or not they're within the margin and to make their request if they would like to pursue a recount if they're within that 1%.
How extensive would a recount be? What do those steps look like? Are there observers?
Yes, there are certainly observers. The recount is a very public process, and we've seen those after the last couple of presidential elections. A recount can happen, let's say it's a statewide race. Mm-hmm. A recount can happen either statewide, where the candidate would like to have a recount in every municipality, in every county around the state, or they can select specific places, like we saw in 2020, where they could have requested a whole statewide recount, but only selected two counties. And so before a candidate can start a recount, they have to first get an estimate, a cost estimate, from all of our counties or the counties that they've chosen to have a recount in. The counties provide an estimate of what it would cost in terms of bringing back their poll workers, setting up their space, getting their tabulators programmed, all those things. And then they provide that cost estimate to the candidate. And then the candidate does have to pay the cost estimate before the recount can begin. But the recounts are usually held in county facilities because there's a lot of people involved. So basically, they're bringing back all their poll workers. They're bringing back all the ballots. They're bringing back all the tabulators. They're going to want lots of observers to be involved. And the representatives from the parties or from the candidates that are involved are all there. And then there's a recount board. So there's three people in each county that make determinations if there are challenges that come up. So as they're reviewing the ballots, as they're reviewing things like absentee certificates, there's a recount board, a bipartisan recount board that makes those determinations. And again, every step of that recount process happens in the public eye. They're often even live streamed for people to watch at home.
Megan Wolf with us as administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, talking about the midterm election process, the steps that happen next. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Megan, before polls closed Tuesday, you had reported no major problems or issues being aired by local election officials. Would you characterize that the midterm election process continued to go smoothly through the day and night?
The election, the 2022 November general election went incredibly smoothly, be it our preparations for in-person absentee, the preparations for by-mail absentee at polls on election day, and now the important steps that happen after election day. I'm really pleased to report that every step of that process has gone really smoothly. But I do want to point out that that is absolutely not by accident that it went very smoothly. It is because of the hard work and the dedication of your local election officials and your poll workers. So in all 1,850 cities, towns, and villages around Wisconsin, you have a local election official, a clerk, and they've spent the last 2 years preparing for this, making sure that everything is just right so that they can administer fair and accurate democracy to your community. So I really want to thank them for all their hard work and preparation because Tuesday's election went well because of their hard work and preparation.
I want to pause here for turnout, and I know that you don't have official turnout estimates immediately after elections, but, we saw a few clerks that expected voter turnout of 80% or higher. When might the commission have a clearer picture of turnout statewide?
Yeah, so it looks like according to some of those unofficial, totals that we're seeing either through the Associated Press or through looking at the various county websites. So it looks like there were about 2.6 million voters that participated in the governor's contest, right? So, sometimes people won't vote for all the contests on the ballot, but when we look at that particular contest, it looks like over 2.6 million people that participated. When you look at that as compared to the estimated voting age population, so we look at the census data and see who in Wisconsin is potentially an eligible voter, that number is about 4.6 million people that are eligible to vote in the state of Wisconsin. So when we look at those two numbers, unofficially right now, it looks like about 57% of the eligible voting population participated in Tuesday's election. And that's just shy of what we saw in terms of turnout in 2018, where we saw about 59%.
Well, a quick follow-up here. Madison and Green Bay, there were reports of needing to order more ballots by Election Day afternoon. We also heard from a poll worker on the UW-Madison campus who called in yesterday about running out of ballots at a site. Can you give clarity there?
Yeah. So, each community, their turnout might vary. So mm-hmm. In some communities, you might see really high turnout. In some communities, you might see lower turnout. We also have Election Day registration. So that means on Election Day, their eligible people can still show up that may not have already registered, and they can register to vote on Election Day. And so in some communities, they did report seeing very high turnout of people that did come get registered to vote, maybe for the first time, and participate in Tuesday's election. And, clerks, they plan for, they have to look at history and decide how many people they think are going to show up in their community to vote. Sometimes they get that estimate right. Sometimes they overestimate. Sometimes they underestimate. But in those situations where they do potentially run out of ballots, they work with their county clerk to have additional ballots printed and brought to the polling place. So I'm not aware of any place that wasn't able to make sure that their voters had enough ballots and make sure that the voting process continued smoothly.
Megan Wolf is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission overseeing statewide election. Join in on things like security, integrity, what it is like to be a poll worker or observer, how you felt as a voter casting your ballot this midterm election. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Wisconsin's chief election official. Megan Wolf is here, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, WEC. Join in on central count processes, recounts, poll books, voting equipment, absentee ballots. what it's like to be one of the Wisconsin's more than 1,800 local clerks. 800-642-1234. Administrator Megan Wolf stays with us. Let's look for a moment at absentee ballots. State law prohibiting the processing of them until polls open on Election Day. How much does the counting of absentee ballots slow down the process, the election process?
Yeah, so we certainly have seen an increase in the number of absentee ballots that are utilized here in the state of Wisconsin. So in 2020, I think is where we saw that shift happen, like a lot of places, where our state went from a state that did about 6% absentee voting by mail to that year doing, you know, about 60% absentee voting by mail. We're seeing things sort of level off. I believe it's well under 50% of ballots that are cast by absentee ballot in this particular election. That being said, you know, our state law does not allow local election officials to start processing, to start tabulating those absentee ballots before Election Day. So in Wisconsin, your absentee ballot is sent to your polling place. In 38 communities, it's sent to a central counting absentee location. And all those ballots are opened, reviewed, and not the ballot itself, but the certificate is reviewed, and the ballot is tabulated at the polls on Election Day. And we saw that the clerks made tremendous, I think, progress in creating more efficiencies for their poll workers to make sure that we were able to handle that new volume of absentee ballots in a timely way. And so I think a lot of our communities, even our large communities like Milwaukee, we saw that their unofficial results were completed and every ballot tabulated in public before midnight. And so I think that's pretty incredible. And again, a huge testament to the hard work and preparation of local election officials to create those efficiencies and to ensure that they're able to get those ballots counted in a timely manner.
As you mentioned, your data reported just north of 815,000 absentee ballots had been requested. A little over 90% were returned to local clerks, and that is a drop off from 2020. Why has absentee voting dropped off, do you think?
I think that, you know, in Wisconsin, we have three ways that anybody can choose to request and participate in an election. So anybody has the choice to either choose to vote absentee by mail, to vote during in-person absentee in the 2 weeks before Election Day, or to vote at the polls on Election Day. And I think that folks are more aware now than ever of their three options. And for different reasons, people may choose one of those three options. And so I really think that's just folks making the choice of what's the best way for them to cast their absentee ballot. We're certainly seeing a higher percentage of people choosing absentee than in years prior to 2020. So I think people are just aware of their options and choosing the option that's best for them.
I want to talk now about fake ballots because prosecutors recently charged a former Milwaukee elections official with sending several fake military ballots to the chair of the legislature's election committee, Representative Janelle Branchon, who received in her mail these, you know, three fraudulent military ballots. Are there vulnerabilities to shore up in Wisconsin's military absentee ballot process and how military ballots are handled and by whom?
I think that's a great question. First of all, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, we do not issue ballots. Your local election official does. And in this particular instance, this was a isolated incident by a single person that was willing to commit a crime. And I think that's really important to point out. What they did here was commit a crime. And I think that these actions, they are caught swiftly, they are detected swiftly, they have absolutely no impact on the election. But we do recognize the damage that things like this cause to public confidence. And so I think what that election official did in this instance, what that individual did in this instance, was a real violation of trust of the public, of other local election officials. But I do feel confident in our system's ability, be it a voter detecting a problem, being it us detecting a problem through the statewide system, being your local clerk detecting a problem when they receive or when a ballot is returned. There's a challenge process if people believe that there's a ballot that's been unlawfully issued or received. And so I think there are so many checks in the process. That being said, you know, we're always glad, and I'm sure the commission, our bipartisan commission, is always glad to work with the legislature to see if there are other improvements that can be made to the law. The way that military absentee ballots are issued right now is exactly as the Wisconsin state law prescribes. Wisconsin state law does exempt military voters from the registration process. And so if lawmakers desire to see a change to that process, that's certainly something that we'd be interested in continuing to work on. But in the meantime, I think that our system does have many checks. And these instances, these isolated incidents, they are detected, they are caught, and there are consequences.
Megan Wolf with us as we talk about the midterm election process, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. Megan, you know, Governor Evers defeating Republican challenger Tim Michaels. During the campaign, Michaels had supported eliminating the State Elections Commission. The agency has also, as you know, been a target of criticism from other candidates seeking office as well. Is there anything you wish to say about these remarks with the election now over?
You know, as election officials, we focus on our jobs and we know that we do our jobs with integrity. And so I don't get involved in that political rhetoric. I think any changes to the law or the process, that is at the prerogative of our lawmakers and governor to decide if they desire to see any changes. But I do think what we have here in Wisconsin is very unique in the sense that we have a bipartisan commission, three Republicans and three Democrats that make decisions related to election administration, and they make those decisions as part of a public process. They make those decisions in a public meeting. And so anytime someone contemplates changes to our structure, I think they need to consider the trade-offs that would be there, that we do have this unique process where you can watch those decisions made, and those decisions are made in a bipartisan way. And then we have nonpartisan staff like myself that carry out those directives from our commission. So it's a pretty unique process that involves a lot of transparency, a lot of ability for the public to get involved. And so I think anytime that model is questioned or there's a desire to change it, that people should consider the trade-off.
Only a few seconds left, but how about the number of poll observers in this election? Heard there were a lot. Do you know how many observers there were and how it compared to past elections?
So we don't have a count of observers. Anybody can observe elections in Wisconsin as long as you sign in, show your ID, follow the rules of the chief inspector. But we did have reports that there were an increased number of observers around the state. I think our clerks prepared for that with larger spaces and ensuring that they had the opportunity to engage. And I'm also really pleased to report, though, that we didn't have any reports of any sort of major incidents. So I think observers are a really important part of the process. And it sounds like everybody, followed the guidance of the local chief election inspector, and we were able to have a smooth election day. So I think, you know, having more observers is great because it means that people are engaged with the election process.
Megan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Megan Wolf, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. We have a link to the MyVoteWI portal for all voting and election information. The link is at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.